राधमाधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंदना यशोरा नंदना ब्रज जन रंदना यामन तीरवनाचारी यमुनतीरवनाचारी जय हो राधमाधव कुंज बिहारी जय हो राधमाधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोरा नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यशोरा नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यमुना तीरवनाचारी यमुना तीरवनाचारी जय हो राधमाधव कुंज बिहारी जय हो राधमाधव कुंज बिहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज काचार्य स्तोत्र सतश्री श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस टुडे श्री भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय निताय गो प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि बो समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. Nishtaprayeshu bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhakti bhavati naishtiki. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shri Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 24, Renunciation of Karma Muni, text number 44. Word meanings. Nirahankriti, without false ego. Nirmama, without material affection. Cha, and Nirdvanda, without duality. Samadrik, seeing equality. Swadrik, seeing himself. Pratyak, turned inward. Prashanta, perfectly composed. Di, mind. Dhira, sober, not disturbed. Prashanta, calmed. Urmi, whose waves, Iva like Udadhi, the ocean. So this continues on from yesterday's verse somewhat. So I'll read yesterday's verse or Friday's verse. He fixed his mind, so this is Karma Muni. He fixed his mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Parabrahman, who is beyond cause and effect, who manifests the three modes of material nature, who is beyond those three modes, and who is perceived only through unfailing devotional service. So the main point here is he's doing some kind of yoga, but it's actually fixed on the Supreme. Mana Brahmani Yunjata, fixing his mind on the Supreme. And the result is, today's verse, thus he gradually became unaffected by the false ego of material identity and became free from material affection. Undisturbed, equal to everyone, and without duality, he could indeed see himself also. His mind was turned inward and was perfectly calm, like an ocean unagitated by waves. Srila Prabhupada's purport. When one's mind is in full Krishna consciousness and one fully engages in rendering devotional service to the Lord, he becomes just like an ocean unagitated by waves. This very example is also cited in Bhagavad Gita. One should become like the ocean. The ocean is filled by many thousands of rivers, and millions of tons of its water evaporates into clouds. Yet the ocean is the same unagitated ocean. The laws of nature may work, but if one is fixed in devotional service at the lotus feet of the Lord, he is not agitated, for he is introspective. He does not look outside to material nature, but he looks in to the spiritual nature of his existence. With a sober mind, he simply engages in the service of the Lord. Thus, he realizes his own self without false identification with matter and without affection for material possessions. Such a great devotee is never in trouble with others because he sees everyone from the platform of spiritual understanding. He sees himself and others in the right perspective. Om Jnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. When I first read this verse, without looking at the previous verse, I thought, well, this sounds like just ordinary yoga, because it's all about being calm and equipoised and all these kinds of things that we hear, unagitated, dhira, sober, and so on. So especially in the Bhagavad Gita, these kinds of qualities, they tend to come up in Krishna's description of the yogi. Krishna explains to Arjuna about, he should be a yogi. And Arjuna wants to know about the qualifications of the yogi. So the kinds of things we hear are what we're hearing here in this verse. And when we talk about, this is a kind of advancement. Now, of course, I read the previous verse, so we know that this is in the context of bhakti. But if you didn't realize that it was in the context of bhakti, You'd think, well, this isn't really the kind of thing we think about when we think about making spiritual advancement. We don't tend to think so much about how I'm going to be calm and peaceful and see all others equally and all of these kinds of things. We think about our heart and our devotion to Krishna maturing and progressing in Krishna consciousness. So these are like side benefits of what happens to someone as a result of devotional service. You'll find in Bhagavad Gita, it's very interesting actually, I was just recently reading through Bhagavad Gita again, and Prabhupada just puts Krishna consciousness everywhere, in all the different contexts. What you hear, like you'll hear, just like here now, it's definitely you can say, well, it just said in the previous verse that this is in the context of bhakti. But a lot of times in the Bhagavad Gita, it's not necessarily in the context of bhakti directly. It's often Krishna is speaking about jnana or karma yoga or hatha yoga or ashtanga yoga. So he's not necessarily talking to, but Prabhupada sees devotional service everywhere. He sees, because for Prabhupada, the overall point of Bhagavad Gita is bhakti. So he sees that everything is connected with that. So when he gives his purports, a lot of times the verse doesn't say anything about bhakti directly. It's just talking about karma yoga, which Prabhupada actually, he just equates that with bhakti. In a technical sense, it's not exactly bhakti proper, but in any case, Prabhupada does it. He does that with yoga, and he does it even with jnana. He always connects everything with devotional service. So in the purport, you'll see Prabhupada just says, so the Krishna conscious person, what Prabhupada does routinely is, just like these certain qualities are there and they're being applied to a yogi in Bhagavad Gita, so Prabhupada will say, so the Krishna conscious person, da-da-da, has these things automatically, more or less, he says. That message is there over and over again in Srila Prabhupada's purports. So these are, again, these are not necessarily the first thing that comes to mind when we think about advancement in Krishna consciousness. Oh, good, I'm going to be free from, you know, agitation or that kind of thing. The list of things, I was going to go through some of these lists and show where they appear in Bhagavad Gita. But I was reading in the 11th canto. Well, actually, I was reading Bhakti Sandarbha. And this is quoted by Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami in Bhakti Sandarbha, in the beginning, early part of the Bhakti Sandarbha, he's showing how the abhideya, if you want to get the goal of life, what should you do? Well, you should practice bhakti. That's what Bhakti Sandarbha is about, ultimately. Then he gets into the details of bhakti. But first, he establishes very solidly by quoting. He actually goes through the different cantos of Bhagavatam and pulls out, canto by canto, verses are directly saying that the abhideya, the practice of human, what you should be doing in human life, is bhakti. So in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where the Uddhava Gita, where Krishna is speaking to Uddhava, the Uddhava Gita is like an expanded Bhagavad Gita. It has many of the same points, but in more detail. And there are actually a few chapters about jnana, where you hear about this kind of thing that we're hearing about today, being equipoised and all that kind of thing. Krishna spends quite some time on that. But then after that, he goes into explaining. Now, one of the points that's made there, and made by our acharyas repeatedly, that you can't get perfection through jnana or karma or yoga. You have to have bhakti. There has to be some bhakti in your practice. You won't go back to Godhead, Vaikuntha, or wherever you want to go. You won't even get Brahman realization unless there is some bhakti there. It has to be there. So Krishna talks about yoga, and he talks about karma, and he talks about jnana. Then he talks about bhakti. So in the context of bhakti, it's very interesting that Uddhava asks this question. This is 11:11. So 11th canto, 11th chapter, text 26 and 27. Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, what type of person do you consider to be a true devotee?" So a really direct question to Krishna. Who do you consider to be a devotee? And what type of devotional service is approved by great devotees as worthy of being offered to your lordship? So then he glorifies Krishna, the rest of his question, in the next verse. So then this is quite long here, but I'm going to read this. We know, of course, we're familiar, most of us, at least somewhat, with the 26 qualities of a devotee. They appear in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's usually the list that we point to. And it's just a little side here. There's an early lecture in New York City, one of Prabhupada's early lectures there. And he's mentioned something about the 26 qualities. So apparently Prabhupada had given the 26 qualities as a list to the devotees. So he says, so he starts quoting, then he says, so the who has the paper? He means, you know, they're supposed to have this paper that with the 26 qualities on it. He said, no one has it. How are you going to make any advancement if you don't know what these qualities are of a devotee? He's a little irritated, or showing some irritation there. Finally, someone comes up with it, and then he reads through the different qualities, 26 qualities. So anyway, this is Krishna, the 11th canto. All of these things, these are things that Krishna says about the devotee to Uddhava. O Uddhava, a saintly person is merciful and never injures others. Even if others are, of course, naturally when we read these things, we think, do I have these qualities? Will I ever have these qualities? You know, we can see how we align with these. Even if others are aggressive, he is tolerant and forgiving toward all living entities. All living entities. His strength and meaning in life come from the truth itself. He is free from all envy and jealousy, and his mind is equal in material happiness and distress. Thus, he dedicates his time to work for the welfare of others. This is an amazing thing, actually, about Krishna consciousness. At the advanced level of Krishna consciousness is you're always thinking of others. You're not thinking about yourself. How, you know, oh, I'm going to go back to Godhead, or, you know, all the suffering is going to stop, or whatever, thinking about, you're only thinking of the welfare. In fact, Krishna says in the 10th canto, he says we should be like trees. What does a tree do? It just gives and gives and gives. Somebody can come and cut the limb off the tree and it doesn't protest. It's only about giving shade, giving fruit, giving flowers, giving its wood, ultimately. This is actually what Krishna says, how a human being should live. So how counterintuitive is this to us? Most of us, we think, I'm living my life because I want, you know, so many things, material or even spiritual. But this is actually a qualification of an advanced devotee. We can see how elevated this state of consciousness is, that you're only thinking of the welfare of others. I was just reading in Chaitanya Charitamrita also recently about Vasudev Dutt. He wanted to take all the suffering of every living entity in the universe into himself, so no one else would have to suffer. So it's an amazing state of consciousness. So let me go on here. So he dedicates his time to work for the welfare of all others. His intelligence is never bewildered by material desires, and he has controlled his senses. His behavior is always pleasing, never harsh, and always exemplary, and he is free from possessiveness. This is one of the qualities that we're hearing about today, in today's verse. He never endeavors in ordinary worldly activities, and he strictly controls his eating. I've been listening to Bhaktivedanta Thakura. This book is about, a wonderful book, it's about devotees, next generation after Lord Chaitanya's associates, Narottam and Srinivasacharya and Shyamananda and other devotees. So there is described, they're going to some village and they're having a big festival, and the people there are really excited. These are like really, they know that these are advanced Vaishnavas. So they say, oh, Ekadashi's coming. We're going to learn how to observe Ekadashi from them. So what they discover is how the devotees observe Ekadashi. They eat once a day on the Dashami, the day before. They fast completely Nirjala Ekadashi, on Ekadashi, and they eat once a day on the Dwadashi. So this is the example they're showing to the villagers. The villagers are thinking, whoa. In any case, so these are the advanced devotees they're seeing in their behavior. Let's see. I read that. A saintly person is thoughtful. Oh, I skipped one. He never endeavors. No, let's see. Sorry. Oh, yeah. He therefore always remains peaceful and steady. That comes after controlling eating. He therefore remains peaceful and steady. A saintly person is thoughtful and accepts me, Krishna, as his only shelter. Such a person is very cautious in the execution of his duties and is never subject to superficial transformations. Because he is steady and noble, even in distressing situation. Nice word, huh? Noble, not petty. He has conquered over the six material qualities, namely hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, old age, and death. So we can look forward to this if we become really Krishna conscious, conquering over hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, old age, and ultimately death. In other words, you get a spiritual body. So these things aren't a concern anymore at some stage. He is free from all desire for prestige and offers honor to others. He is expert in reviving the Krishna consciousness of others and therefore never cheats anyone. So this one struck me as interesting. He is expert in reviving the Krishna consciousness of others and therefore never cheats anyone. So whenever he deals with someone, they're not being cheated. Rather, he is a well-wishing friend to all, being most merciful. Such a saintly person must be considered the most learned of men. He perfectly understands that the ordinary religious duties prescribed by me in various scriptures possess favorable qualities that purify the performer, and he knows that neglect of such duties constitutes a discrepancy in one's life. So Krishna here, he's giving some credit to karma, ordinary karma. As I said, he has spoken about karma. So karma is about doing your duty, ordinary duties in life. And they're very strict, of course, in traditional Vedic culture. Every householder has to do certain things every single day. And there are also periodic things that must be done. So Krishna is saying, you know, you should understand that there is value in these things. He knows that neglect of such duties constitutes a discrepancy in one's life. But having taken shelter of at my lotus feet, however, a saintly person ultimately renounces such ordinary religious duties and worships me alone. He is thus considered the best among all living entities. So that's the end of the list. And then there's this very, what I thought was very interesting. After all of that, then the next verse, 11:11:33, Krishna says, we should all like this one. My devotees may or may not know exactly what I am, who I am, and how I exist. But if they worship me with unalloyed love, then I consider them to be the best of devotees. My devotees may or may not know exactly what I am, who I am, or how I exist. But if they worship me with unalloyed love, then I consider them to be the best of devotees. This is an interesting point, actually, because this may encourage someone to think, well, I guess I don't really need to study the books and read the books and get a Bhakti Shastri degree and this degree and that degree. But this is really, he's just saying that the most important thing is to have devotion to me. It doesn't mean neglect everything else, although you can neglect your ordinary duties when you're on an elevated level. But sometimes devotees misunderstand that we're not jnanis. We're devotees. Prabhupada would call us pure devotees. I know sometimes devotees get bewildered by that. Why would Prabhupada call us pure devotees? We're just sadhakas. We're just trying here, and we have so many imperfections. So the idea is I understand it, my understanding gets reinforced as I read in different places, in different contexts. What Prabhupada is talking about is that our practice is about pure devotion. We don't think that I have to learn Ashtanga Yoga in order to become a pure devotee. Right? It's not part of our process. And neither is jnana, at least what is understood as jnana yoga. Now, in jnana yoga, these different qualities that we're talking about, just like the ones that come out in this verse today, you work on those specifically. In Krishna consciousness, we work on becoming devotees specifically. And the other things are incidental. They will happen as the heart becomes purified and as we mature in Krishna consciousness. So we're not mixing in jnana practices or yoga practices or especially karma kanda practices. That's why we're pure devotees, because our process is about pure devotional service. We're not mixing in. We don't come to the temple and sit in asana and, you know, think that if I don't do yoga, then I'm not going to get perfection. We don't think that way. So sometimes devotees, they think, well, going back to this idea that the acharyas, they're always making this, emphasizing this point, that bhakti, the other processes need bhakti, but bhakti doesn't need the other processes. Sutta Goswami, in the second chapter of the Bhagavatam, he says, you'll get jnana and vairagya automatically just by devotional service to me. These things, you'll automatically be renounced, and you'll automatically get knowledge. So it's not that we're against jnana. When we say, you know, devotees don't have to cultivate jnana, sometimes the idea is there, well, as I was saying here, it doesn't really matter if I know the philosophy. But it does matter, actually. And what the jnana that we cultivate is not the same as jnana yoga. It means learning about Krishna. And Prabhupada certainly wanted us to do that. In fact, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says that helps you. It helps you fix your mind on Krishna if you understand Krishna. You understand the whole philosophy. And of course, we have our great philosophical, or Adi philosopher, Jiva Goswami. Of course, all the Goswamis were great philosophers, but he especially is known for that because of the way he presented the philosophy of Krishna consciousness in such detail. If you study the Sandarbhas, what you find, I find this interesting, actually. Sometimes I think, well, there's so many details in the way, what Jiva Goswami does, basically, he takes points that basically all of us will accept. For example, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if we had a true and false test among devotees, true or false, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I think everybody would get it right? Everyone would say true. What Jiva Goswami does, he spends a whole book explaining from Shastra the proof, pulling out all the proofs and all the arguments why you should accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, why Shiva is not the Supreme Person and so on, or this God or that God, or all the gods are the same and so on. He shows from Shastra, because in the very first, in the Tattvasandarbha, he says, this is how we're going to prove what, this is, I'm going to, you know, teach you something, and this is how I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it based on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, he goes through the Vedic, you know, different aspects, parts of the Vedic literature, and finally he settles on, this is the ultimate pramana. This is the ultimate evidence. This is our evidence. You want proof about God? You want proof that Krishna is God? Well, there are different ways to prove things. And if you want to understand who God is, you have to accept this kind of proof. There's no other way you're going to figure it out. You're not going to figure out who God is, what he looks like, what he does, whether it's a he or a she or an it or whatever. You're not going to get any conclusive truth. You're not going to come to conclusive truth by any other method. You have to accept. Why? Because God said so, you can say. Because he set it up this way. This is how you get to it. So he says, Jiva Goswami says, so we're going to go to Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the conclusive proof. So that's what he does. He teaches these things, these aspects of tattva, atma tattva, and jiva tattva, and paramatma tattva, and so on. Bhakti tattva, Krishna tattva, all these tattvas. He explains every one of them. And again, there are many things that, or most of these things we already know. Now, there are some things that get a little hair splitting, you might say, these certain details, and maybe most of us don't quite grasp how this or that works. But he explains those things. But he does it all by quoting from Srimad Bhagavatam. And the other thing is, he doesn't quote exclusively from the Bhagavatam. He also quotes from the Upanishads and other Vishnu Purana, Padma Purana, different places. Actually, he quotes, I don't know what it is, 100 or 200 different shastras in his Shatsandarbha. Extremely knowledgeable Jiva Goswami was. So what does he? So that's what he does. He explains step by step by step. And he's actually, even though much of what he does is defeating Mayavad philosophy or other philosophies, you know, there are especially six darshans or main philosophies in the context of Indian tradition. And he, you know, brings up arguments when he's arguing for the points he's making. He's considering also, he's thinking, well, people may think this verse, even in the Bhagavatam, they take it impersonally. So he explains why. No, this is a personal. You have to take this. Krishna's explaining, or whoever is speaking, this is, you have to take a personal interpretation of these things. So he goes to great lengths to explain all these things. And in the very beginning of Tapasandarbha, Jiva Goswami says that I'm not here to argue. So basically, accept what I say. This book is written for devotees who already more or less accept the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. For sadhakas, basically, he's writing the book. But he wants to strengthen their resolve and their learning and their determination in Krishna consciousness, which will bring about all these qualities that we're hearing about. And that, so they won't be misled by other philosophies also. I think of this sometimes that we tend to... Now, of course, Prabhupada covered different things in his books. But if we came up, you know, many of us, if we came up to certain, like, academic arguments, we might be a little disturbed by them. Because some of these academics, they know the books better than we do, actually. Some of them study. It's amazing. I could never be an academic because they get so detailed and they research. You look at the back of the, you know, the bibliography at the back of some academic book and it goes on page after page after page, all of the books that they reference. So they can make arguments against us that we may be a little taken aback. Oh, I'm not sure how to respond to that. I didn't know that it said this. I didn't know that this person in the 17th century made this argument and so on. So, of course, Prabhupada covers them in a kind of broad way sometimes, but sometimes the minute details, we may not have heard every argument, you might say, every argument against Krishna consciousness. So that's why Jiva Goswami, he's trying to really solidify it. When you get done, or you don't have to get very far in Jiva Goswami, where you see, and of course, just like Prabhupada, you see the conviction there. You know, Prabhupada, he challenged his disciples, are you convinced? Are you convinced Krishna consciousness will not spread unless you are convinced? And he says, so I'm convinced, he said. I am convinced. He said his Vyas Puja offering that he read to his God brothers, 1930s, whatever it was. And he said something like, because of the arguments of our Gurudev, we're not going to budge an inch from our convictions in Krishna consciousness. So solidly formed basis of Krishna consciousness. So I was just thinking of these things in the context of how, you know, all these, I was talking about jnana actually, because we may say, oh, we don't want jnana, we don't want to practice jnana because we're pure devotees, just like we're not going to practice Ashtanga yoga, and that's for health maybe, but not for philosophical reasons. So we should think that, no, I need to study these books. And of course, one simple reason why we shouldn't think that, oh, this is jnana and I don't want it, is because Prabhupada told us to study these books. that solves the whole thing. We're following Krishna's order as it's coming through. That's another way we see it, of course. Krishna is speaking through Srila Prabhupada, guiding us. He's Krishna's representative, guiding us in our advancement in Krishna consciousness, and he felt that these things were really important. So I can stop here, if you'd like. I was going to get into some of these references to the Bhagavad Gita, similar verse showing different verses of Bhagavad Gita where the different qualities that have come up in this verse, where Krishna mentions them. But I'll stop here if anybody has any questions or any discussion. Madhamati Prabhu.
I've got so many questions running in my mind, but I'll just start with one. Thinking which one. Anyway, let me just think. This general question, as far as Prabhupada, you started started off with a class where Harshara Prabhupada brings bhakti to everything. And then later on, you mentioning how Jiva Goswami, he explains everything, you know, in detail. As followers of Srila Prabhupada, do we also just take, go along with his thinking? We understand that he is brings bhakti because that is the essence. But like you said, there's karma yoga, and where he explains bhakti. So as his followers, do we also stick to that, or do we need to understand, like you're explaining, that how should be our thinking?
Hmm. Well, the question is, you know, how do we need to, you might put it down to, do we need to study the Sandarbhas, essentially? Do we need to get into all the details and, apply ourselves to that kind of thing? Well, we see that devotees are doing that now. I don't know what's happening with Ramapada Swami, but he was supposed to be teaching a Bhakti Sandarbha course. So he's been studying the Sandarbhas. So part of it, I think, is devotees' own inclination. Not everyone is going to be attracted. Not everyone is maybe going to have the mental faculty to understand a lot of these things. And what I find myself is it helps to... Just like in Prabhupada's books, there are verses that, you know, the purport really helps. Sometimes you read the purport and you say, I'm not quite sure what this means, so it helps. So these, I think the idea is that, now Prabhupada did also encourage us to read these things, to read the books of the Goswamis. He would never say, don't read the books of the Goswamis. In fact, there was some controversy about in the early days, some of the devotees were reading Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And the question was brought to Prabhupada. And at first, Prabhupada was somewhat disturbed because he said, they don't read my books. They need to read my books, at least read my books. But they want to jump here and there. Now, one thing was Prabhupada was just criticizing the mentality of the devotees. You know how we are in modern, we always want new, new, new. I want something new. I mean, I remember myself, a devotee, a couple of weeks, and I'm thinking, gee, every devotee keeps telling me the same thing. I've heard this 50 times, you know. Okay, I know I'm not this body. So, and I was eager to. That was when I read a lot as a new devotee because I always wanted to learn new things. So Prabhupada didn't like the idea that devotees would just jump, you know, put his books aside and jump into Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But at the same time, in the context of that conversation, at least as I remember it, Prabhupada would basically said, "Well, how can I say don't read the Acharyas? These are the Acharyas. Jiva Goswami didn't write this only for his time. He wrote it for all time. He's writing transcendental truth for eternity. So there's a lot of benefit to studying those things. But again, not everyone maybe has the inclination or even for many devotees, just getting through, reading and studying the Bhagavad Gita is difficult. I mean, a lot of devotees don't really have much of an inclination to read very much. And of course, things are getting worse these days. Things are getting worse these days because our brains are getting stunted by the internet. We're used to just reading little clips here and there. People can't concentrate anymore. People don't read books. People are starting, you know, children is a big problem with young, with children, school-age children. There are books written about how big a problem it is. They can't concentrate. So we tend to be, you know, we're part, not maybe not in the early generation, but still we're affected by that because we all, of course, go on the internet. And so the tendency to read like that and to concentrate may be difficult. But it's a good thing. If you can do it, I would say it's a good thing. But don't neglect Srila Prabhupada's books. Of course, that's there. So it seems to me that, of course, you can say this is opinion. What can I say? I can't speak absolute tattva here. But I think it's good to have a mix, actually, to read these books. especially the more philosophical, but even the more, what we say, nectar, you know, Krishna Leela kinds of books, that's fine too. Although when you talk about, you know, the more advanced Krishna Karanamrita, Krishna Bhavanamrita, and Govinda, the Gita Govinda, these books, they get a little bit intimate about what Radha and Krishna and the gopis are doing. It's a little, I mean, I found myself, out of curiosity, looking at these books, and I find I can't read them. I'm just a conditioned soul, and I still think that Radha and Krishna are material, you might say, because my mind has not transcended that way of seeing the world. So, you know, we can be somewhat selective. We don't necessarily have to read everything, but it is helpful, I think. The other thing is you have to really concentrate and think, and that's good, right? At the end of the Bhagavad Gita, you know, Krishna says, one who studies this Bhagavad Gita, reads this, hears this discourse, worships me by his intelligence. And the acharyas say that what Krishna's actually, earlier in the Bhagavad Gita, he talked about jnana. So Krishna says, what they say is that what Krishna is saying here is, you don't really have to worry about jnana, because if you're hearing Bhagavad Gita, that's jnana. That takes care of the jnana aspect that I talked about earlier in the Bhagavad Gita. So again, getting back to this idea, our jnana is understanding about Krishna, understanding Krishna tattva. What is a guru? Ye Krishna tattva hoy. One who knows, say guru hoy. Ye Krishna tattva, say guru hoy. One who knows, veta, show. Ye Krishna tattva veta, say guru hoy. The guru is one who knows Krishna tattva. So the more we can do to understand it, I think it's helpful. But again, I don't want to, you know, imply that you could just put aside Prabhupada's books. No, we should always stay connected to Srila Prabhupada. If not, even if, because, you know, it's true that Prabhupada, there's a lot of repetition in Srila Prabhupada's books, and sometimes, you know, it's a little difficult. But still, just to associate with Srila Prabhupada in that way, hearing is a kind of association. Just like when you're hearing some mundane thing on YouTube or whatever, that's association also. You're associating with the person who's speaking and the message that's coming. So we should take the association. I think like that myself, because I do study the Sandarbhas, and I also read commentaries by Baladev and Vishwanath. And I think, well, I'm associating with them. I'm taking their association in this way. And also, I think of certain verses, just like in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita, we have different verses by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, the very first chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he's drawing from Rupa Goswami, Sarup Damodar, and others. So I think if I know these verses and I chant them, then maybe they'll be happy. Maybe they'll smile on me. This mlecha has learned this verse that I wrote in glorification of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I get some benefit from that. So there's also that aspect of it where you get association with these devotees. That's another thing I mentioned, the Bhakti Ratnakara. So I, for my own benefit, because I hear a lot, like I take a walk every day, so I record things to listen to. So I've recently been listening to the Bhakti Ratnakara, and it's just amazing. One scene after the other where the devotees are... Actually, the overall, if you wanted to take the mood of Bhakti Ratnakara, it's crying. The devotees are just crying because Lord Chaitanya has left, and then all his associates are leaving one after another. And the devotees like Narottam and Srinivas, they go into Navadvipa, they want to see, and then they hear, oh no, this devotee has just passed away, and now this devotee has passed away. Then you go. So then the devotees send him to Puri, and they go to Puri, Srinivas. He meets, this with one little excerpt, Srinivas Acharya talks about his travels. Now one thing, I'm getting really off topic here, but I was just listening to this, so I'll mention it. Srinivas Acharya, of course, was predicted by Lord Chaitanya. You know, I don't know if you know the story, but Lord Chaitanya invested his potency, himself, you might say, into the Padmavati River, and he said some great devotee is going to come and get the mercy from here. So he is considered, in a sense, the embodiment of Lord Chaitanya. So all the devotees are waiting for this person to show up. Both Srinivas and Narottam, they're both the associates of Lord Chaitanya, they're expecting these devotees to show up. So like when they arrive in Puri or Navadvip, all the devotees are in ecstasy and they take them and put them on their laps and they're all crying and then they go into ecstasy. But then what happens is Srinivas, he meets Gadadhar Pandit, of course, one of Lord Chaitanya's closest, most intimate devotees, incarnation of Radharani herself. So he gets some association with Gadadhar Pandit and he said, you should go to Navadvip to see the devotees there. They're still direct associates of Lord Chaitanya there. So he goes to Navadvip, and while he's in Navadvip, the devotees say, you should go back to Puri for those devotees. So on his way back to Puri, he learns that Gadadhar Pandit has passed away. So he cries and cries and cries. And then he has a dream where Gadadhar Pandit appears to him, say, don't worry. And then the same thing happens. He goes to Vrindavan and he misses Rupa and Sanatan. And he's crying, and so much crying in this book. But it's all ecstatic, of course, we know. It's so interesting, isn't it? The highest level of Krishna consciousness means you're crying all the time. It's just like the gopis crying in separation from Krishna. It's intense ecstasy, actually. But for us, it's like, I always think, some non-devotee opened the book and started reading this. They think, what is this? People crying all over the place here. But it's so wonderful. You get to hear about all these devotees. And especially in that book, Bhakti Ratnakara, there are many devotees whose names I haven't heard before because they're, following generations. And some of them are grown up. You know this little boy, Raghunandana, his father told him to offer prasadam to the deity and then the deity wouldn't eat and he got upset with him and then the deity ate and that whole story. His father's name was Mukunda. So we hear about him, but now he's grown up, and he's like one of the leading acharyas, you can say, at the time of Narottam and Srinivas. So we hear all the stories of all these people. So I was thinking, we associate by reading their stories. So we also associate by how they're, what they've written, these books. The Bhakti Ratnakara was written sometime later, 100 years later, after Lord Chaitanya, quite some time later. So this, I don't know how the devotee wrote it, actually. He was inspired, or he interviewed devotees who were still around. I don't know, or read other books, because he does quote other books. Some of those books are still available, actually, in the libraries, like the library in Vrindavan. Some of these old books tell about some of these associates and generations after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, of course, this is the... What were we here? Oh, last night, Devaprastha was reading this quote, how the association, sadhu sangha, is the most important thing. So we want to associate. So getting back to Madhumati's question, right? I think it's good that we associate with devotees by hearing what they've written, as long as we don't neglect other practices that Srila Prabhupada has given us. And we're also maybe cautious about what's appropriate for us to read, according to our level and our inclinations.
Also, Jiva Goswami, known as our Tattva Acharya, so we have to read his books too.
I didn't hear.
What kind of Acharya?
Srila Jiva Goswami, known as our Tattva Acharya.
Oh, yes. Jiva Goswami is our Tattva Acharya.
I love that verse you quoted that said, all you need is unalloyed love. I mean, that's the hard part, the unalloyed love. And in the 10th chapter in 10:11 in the purport, Prabhupada's talking about how some of the Mayavadis criticize and say, the bhaktas, they're just... sentimentalist, they're not scholars, they're not learned. And Prabhupada says, that's not true. That they are very learned scholars who have followed the path of devotion. But even if a devotee doesn't take advantage of their literatures or his spiritual master, if he is sincere, right? If he's sincere in his service, then Krishna personally helps him from within. So the sincere devotee engaged in Krishna consciousness cannot be without knowledge. Now that sounds so good, right? Now the last sentence is, the only qualification is that one carry out his service in full Krishna consciousness. Now that's the hard part. You can do your service, but can you do it in full Krishna consciousness? It's like that thing you said, unalloyed. Yeah. All you need is unalloyed.
Well, probably because there's purport here. When one's mind is in full Krishna consciousness and one fully engages in rendering devotional service to the Lord, it becomes just like an ocean unagitated by waves. So.
And you know, the pure devotee thing, which he said many, many times about his disciples, because compared to Hindus and compared to other, we are. I mean, look at our lives. Look at our morning program. Yeah. Look at our rules. I mean, people don't have any rules. Yoga people don't have any rules. You know, I mean, they're just doing whatever. You know, and jnana karma dhyanavritam. It's not. Who cares, right? All we want is the unalloyed bhav of Krishna.
In one, first canto, second chapter, Jnana Vairagya Yuktasya, in order to survive in spiritual life and to progress, Jnana Vairagya has to be there. Also that verse number 7, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janati Asu Vairagyam Jnanam Cha Ja Ahetukam. So is that something cultivated or it is naturally produced?
The whole point is that we don't cultivate these things independent of bhakti. As I was saying, really the basis of jnana yoga is vairagya. So they really work on vairagya, being austere. You see austere, we see yoga, of course, most of them aren't practicing any kind of bona fide jnana yoga. But we see how austere, you know, walk around naked. Can you imagine living naked? That's pretty difficult, you know. Not only is it embarrassing, it's really, you have no shelter, no clothing, even a shelter of clothing. So the idea is that these things come automatically. Now, of course, we have some regulation in our life, which is some kind of vairagya, you might say, but it's in the context of bhakti. Now, Krishna says specifically in the 11th canto, another verse I keep coming across, he says, generally in bhakti yoga, jnana and vairagya aren't helpful. That's what Krishna says. So in other words, you know, as I'm saying, there's a little bit of that, of course, but our jnana is different from that. You know, we can throw that out. But we have some vairagya, I might say. What is it? Prabhupada translates this as from some dictionary. Vigata raga iti vairagya. Raga means attachment. So vairagya means you're giving up your attachment to things in this material world. That was also one of the things in today's verse. To be detached. So, of course, we see devotees are extremely detached. Look at Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, how detached. These great Babajis, how detached they are. But they didn't set out to be detached. They set out to be devotees of Krishna, and that detachment came automatically. So it's not something that we do outside the context of our advancement in Krishna, our attempts to advance in Krishna consciousness.
Okay, one more question on that. Adilila chapter 5, text 203, in the purport Prabhupada write, if I'm not mistaken, he said, when one wants to understand Bhagavan, bhakti and bhakta must, I looked at that, he writes, must read Goswami's literature like Sanatana, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and then he goes on the list. Yeah. So what does must mean?
I just take it as it is. I won't try to finesse some answer. So you must read it. That's what it says there. Hare Krishna. All right, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.